Thank you all for joining us. This is the Fats, Fuels, and Oils Forecast webinar for the week of April 5th. Today, I have Tori Alden with us, and he's going to go over the veg oil section of our forecast. As always, if you have questions, drop them in the Q&A section in the bottom of Zoom, and we'll get to them at the end of Tori's presentation. With that, Tori, would you like to take it from here?
Yes, thank you, George, and welcome everybody to another week of relatively volatile vegetable oil markets. Last week we got some big data out of USDA, and that's contributed to the volatility. But I think in general, the markets are still trying to grapple with this idea of the renewable diesel production, how much of that is coming online, when it's coming online, whether there will be enough capacity to refine enough soybean oil to provide the feedstocks that those guys need, and whether crushers will crush enough to provide the crude oil that the refiners need to refine that. So there remains a lot of uncertainty. Last week's reports did give us a little bit of clarity around what's going on, or at least I think so. The key takeaways probably from the grain stocks report are two. One, that we probably do have enough soybeans to crush to meet the needs of renewable diesel producers and biodiesel producers ahead of the U.S. harvest. And two, that the crop last year was probably bigger and maybe substantially bigger than USDA's final estimate in January, based on residual use during the first two quarters of the year. It looks like the crop could be as much as 100 or 120 million bushels bigger. That's not a big deal for the stocks numbers. That stuff won't change, but where it impacts things going forward is it actually changes the yield for last year, which changes the trend line yield for this year, and probably expectations around what production will be this, what soybean production will be this year. And quite frankly, if we grew a crop that was that big last year in a relatively dry September, it says a lot about the hardiness of the new soybeans. But with that, let's get on to the forecast and the stuff that we usually talk about. We didn't make any changes to our price forecasts this past week, despite the volatility. You can see that prices have dropped down into the lower end of our forecast range, and we expect prices to kind of trade within this range over the next, well, through the summer, through the growing season. There's generally a little bit of support headed into the growing season. And then once the crop is planted, as long as weather is supportive for yields, there tends to be a little bit of pressure on prices through the growing season. But then as we get into the fall, we really expect that biodiesel demand to kick in, and that's where we expect prices to ramp up to new highs. Last week, we also got the NAS fats and oils report that gave us monthly stocks and supply and demand data for soybean oil. Production came in a little bit higher than we expected, in part because the USDA reported a yield of 11.74 pounds per bushel. And this is getting a little bit into the weeds, but in the end here, you'll see that this is going to be relatively important going forward. Last month they reported 11.75, which is, those are basically the highest yields we've seen in the last several years. And given where prices are, that's maybe not necessarily surprising. But as a result of that, what we did is we changed our forecast for yield. We added about 0.15 pounds to each of the months going forward, and that added about 200 million pounds into our production forecast. So for 2021, now we're projecting production just under 26.2 billion pounds. We offset that increase in production with a larger increase in non-biodiesel usage. So we raised, or non-biofuel usage, We raised that by 325 million pounds, I think, or maybe 350. And as a result, that took our stocks down to about 1.64 billion pounds for the end of the marketing year. The increase in non-biofuel usage is something that we've talked a bit about before. This trying to balance between exports, non-biofuel usage, and then our forecast for biomass-based diesel usage, and where sort of the perfect balance for those things would be. The increase in production allowed us to raise non-biofuel usage up to a level that kind of matches what we've seen so far in the monthly data. If you look at cumulative non-biofuel usage so far this year, it's a little less than 2% above where we were at the same time last year. And so the increase takes our marketing year forecast up 2% from where we were last year. And just as a reminder, last year we saw a big decrease in non-biofuel usage, nearly a billion pounds from the year before. So there's probably some room to raise that. Of course, the big question was, would the surge in demand for biofuel sort of crowd those guys out? That still may be an open question, and the increase in our forecast might be a little bit optimistic. But at least now I feel a little bit better because the marketing year forecast more closely matches the data that we've seen so far. That could change over the course of the marketing year, but at least for now, I'm much more comfortable with where we are than I would say I have been for the last several months. Outside of that, we also get the EIA's new report for soybean oil usage and biofuel production now. I think what we all hoped was that the EIA would add soybean oil or feedstock usage for renewable diesel production to the data, and by to the data, I mean create a new data set that was soybean oil or whatever feedstock used in renewable diesel production, and then continue to report all of the data that they reported in the prior report in the monthly biodiesel production report. What they did was not that. Basically, what they did was they combined feedstock usage across all renewable fuels, which includes not only biodiesel and renewable diesel, but renewable naphtha and even like renewable gasoline and some other things. So that makes it relatively confusing. They also quit reporting total feedstock usage, and so that makes it more difficult to figure out some of the monthly feedstock usage for things like canola, where there's basically one plant that uses canola. And so in most months recently, the EIA hasn't reported canola because they don't want to report on just a single plant. But what they have done is given you total feedstock demand, and so you could kind of back into that canola number. Now, given the combination of the fact that the reporting feedstock usage across all of these different fuel categories, and they're not providing the total feedstock usage, it makes it much more difficult to figure that out. All of that said, the good news out of that, I guess, at least from my perspective, was that the number that they reported for total biofuel demand for soybean oil was relatively close to the number that we had. Now, we don't know if our breakdown is exactly consistent with what happened in terms of how much soybean oil was used in biodiesel production, how much was used in renewable diesel production and co-processing. But at least we have a sense of what the total number is. And we're going to work on getting that sorted out in a way so that we do it consistently, not only across the months, but across all of the feedstocks. And so we can make some reasonable comparisons based on the new data that the EIA reports. It will be interesting to see what USDA does, because USDA's number here for biodiesel production basically reconciled to the EIA data. And so without that data, USDA may ultimately change this from biodiesel production to biofuel production and then reconcile to the number that the EIA publishes. I suspect that's what they'll do, but I'm not 100% sure that that's what they'll do. In that case, it will at least give us a cleaner look between a cleaner breakdown of domestic use. So we'll have biofuel use and then non-biofuel use. And that will be closer to what our calendar year balance sheets look like. They just won't provide the detail behind the biofuel usage. For canola, the USDA data came in and ending stocks were a little bit lower than we had expected. Not a lot, about 25 million pounds. But based on that and based on the implied non-biofuel usage, we cut a bit out of our non-biofuel usage forecast for canola oil. And we also cut our crush forecasts a little bit. And the net result of that was a reduction again in ending stocks down to 162 million pounds. I think it's almost the opposite for canola oil from soybean oil. For soybean oil, I have less confidence in whether whether non-biofuel usage will stick or won't stick. And that's why I've been hesitant to add usage back into that forecast. For canola oil, I'm more confident for a couple of reasons. One, because canola oil sits relatively high in the cost curve for feedstocks. It basically sits at the top of the cost curve for feedstocks. And two, because of consumer preferences, the usage of canola oil, especially in the food manufacturing industry, is likely to remain relatively strong. So the small cut that I made this week in our forecast for non-biofuel usage just trues us up with the data that we've seen so far this year. And it wasn't a significant cut. I think it was 25 million pounds or something like that. And I think we had reduced production by 50 million pounds. And so that's where you got the decrease in ending stocks. For our canola oil cash price forecast, you see we're expecting a little bit of weakness, and we've seen some weakness, especially in Canadian prices over the last several weeks. But then we expect prices to kind of ramp up into the summer before breaking after harvest and then kind of ramping back up. A lot of that is just based on the seasonal spread between canola oil and soybean oil. And so we expect that spread to widen out going into just before the soybean oil or the soybean harvest, when soybean oil supplies in theory should be at their lowest, or at least soybean oil stocks will start to draw down from levels that will look pretty ample over the next several months before it starts to normalize here back near the end of the year. Now, going forward in January forward, we're expecting canola oil to be able to be used in renewable diesel production. And so if the EPA doesn't grant that pathway by the end of 2021, I think our forecast out here will look dramatically different. For palm oil, not a ton of news in palm oil, really. This week, we've gotten the monthly survey for the MPOB report. In general, analysts expect a small build in palm oil stocks at the end of March. They expect them to rise by about 1.3% or 1.7%. And that's due to a bigger increase in production than in exports. We got cargo surveyor data for the month of March last week, and that showed about a 25% increase from February. And so most analysts expect exports to come in about 25% above where they were in February. I think the big key question for the MPOB report, which is scheduled for release on April 12th, will be this production number and its implication for production going forward. This will be the first month where we really get a significant increase in the seasonal pattern that typically bottoms in the late winter, early spring, and then rises through September or October. There are some questions about the availability of labor, but with prices at the levels that they're at, I think it probably looks a lot like last year. And so we basically have production kind of mirroring last year over the next couple of months. And then we have it in a generally the same trend that we saw last year over the balance of the marketing year. A key thing to remember here is that our forecast for the marketing year is 19 million tons. And so if production comes in a bit above where we expect it to in this next report, we probably will raise this a little bit. For a very long time, we were at 19.25, and that was a number that I was pretty comfortable with just based on where we've been the last couple of years and the tree numbers. And so we'd probably raise it back to about that level and then kind of see going forward from there. If it continues to come in above where we expect it to, then we would obviously raise it a little bit more. But I don't think it's a situation where we're going to see, you know, 20 million tons of production for palm oil. On the export side, there was obviously a big increase from the really, really low levels that we saw in January and February. Part of that had to do with Ramadan, which starts on April 13th, and stocking ahead of that. Part of it probably has to do with the fact that just because exports were so low in January and February, there's a bit of restocking that needs to go on just in the normal course of business. The real key will be whether that strength continues in the coming months. There are real concerns about the resurgence of the coronavirus in India and the impact that that's having on economic activity and in vegetable oil demand in the world's largest importing country. And similarly in China, it seems like demand has slowed a bit relative to where it was earlier in the year when China was really driving a lot of the increase in vegetable oil markets. But there's less certainty about the what's going on in China right now. You hear relatively weak demand for palm oil, and then you hear purchases out of South America for soybean oil. And so there's not quite as clear a picture about what's going on in China right now, I think, as there was at this time last year. But those two countries and their demand will not only be important for what the price of palm oil, but also for world vegetable oil fundamentals and the prices of the other oils. And this MPOB report will give a little bit of insight into that, but probably more importantly will be the next 1 or 2 months of export demand to see if there's any real follow through to the increase that we saw this month. And just to put this month in perspective, it's not like the 25% increase took us to some record level of palm oil exports. It just basically took us back to what I would say is probably the lower end of the historical range rather than where we were before, which was the really, really low end of the historical range. Still, that report will be important and we would expect that palm oil prices probably will trade a little bit range bound ahead of it, just because we won't get a lot of data ahead of that. We'll get cargo surveyor data on the 10th, but outside of that, we won't get much data for palm oil. And I think that this uncertainty about the level of export demand will keep prices from moving sort of sharply one way or the other. Switching to biodiesel, this week's article was really going to be about the EIA report, and given the changes in the EIA report and our need to sort of reconfigure the way that we look at that data, there's not really much to report there. Probably more interesting anyway, given the fact that the EIA data is a couple months behind, is really what's been going on with the hobo spread. And you can see the hobo spread ramped way up to 230 before dropping really sharply. This is sort of what we had expected could happen at around 180, and historically has happened around 180. You see it the first time it hit 180, it backed off sharply. But that said, we don't really expect this trend to continue, at least over the relatively short term. We expect prices to bounce back as strength in soybean oil and relative weakness in energy prices in the short term due to the concerns about the coronavirus in India, and also the increased lockdowns in European nations probably weighs on energy prices in the short term. But we think an increase in energy prices relative to soybean oil probably pressures the hobo spread through the summer and into the fall before, again, the surge in demand from renewable diesel producers takes our soybean oil forecast up and the hobo spread back up. That kind of translates into RINs, although in a relatively muted way. The model expects RIN prices to drift a little bit higher, maybe trade kind of sideways here until the hobo spread kicks up in the fall and then increase. I've got to say, this week, the models really were a bit confused by what we're expecting for ethanol production and our hobo forecast. And so basically the way that this works is we forecast the D6 RIN, and then we use the D6 RIN and the hobo forecast to forecast the D4 RIN. And the model really wanted to take D4 prices down below D6 prices here during the summer because of that decrease in the hobo spread. And so we adjusted it to make it so that there's a relatively narrow difference between the two, a little bit wider than we've seen recently, but still a kind of a narrow spread relative to, I think, what probably is the historical average or close to it. So we'll see how that shakes out. We'll see whether the models are right or human intuition is right in this case. For gross margins, you can see gross margins have remained under pressure based on the feedstock mixes that we're assuming here, and we don't expect a big bounce back just based on the straight gross margin without credits. With credits, things look a little bit different. We do expect basically margins to remain about where they are, maybe a little bit higher from where they have been, certainly over the past year, based on the strength of primarily RIN credits, because if you look at our forecast for LCFS credit price, we expect it to continue to slowly drift lower as more renewable diesel capacity comes online and more capacity comes online in California. All right. With that, I will open it up for questions.
All right. Thanks, Tori. We only have a few minutes for questions, but one of the first questions we have here is any hints about a Supreme Court ruling on SRE?
I haven't heard anything yet. I would kind of expect that almost no matter what the Supreme Court does, that the Biden administration will probably react by instructing the EPA to limit the number of SREs granted. That's my expectation, and that's kind of the way that we built it into our forecast. So just we're forecasting basically zero SREs for the foreseeable future. And so I know that people are focused on this case, and obviously it will be important, but I think the net effect of it is still going to be zero or very, very close to zero small refinery exemptions.
Okay. Can you comment on why our forecast for canola oil is based on LA and not another market like Chicago?
So we had done Chicago for quite a while, and we lost our source for Chicago. And so that was part of it. The other part of it was that we wanted to shift from the Midwest to the West Coast, because I think that the gravity of the canola oil market is going to shift to the West Coast, especially if and when the EPA approves the pathway for canola oil to generate RINs and renewable diesel production. I think that the infrastructure has kind of already been built out in Canada's West Coast ports and railways, so that they can send unit trains back and forth from Canada to the U.S. and U.S. to Canada. And so ultimately, I think that L.A. price is going to be a better price for the biofuels report. We're trying to find a new source for the Chicago price, because we've gotten a lot of requests for that. And so it's not something that we're going to completely abandon. But even if we hadn't lost the Chicago source, I think we probably still, for the purposes of this report, probably still would have shifted to Los Angeles, just because we expect that that's kind of where the action is going to be, for lack of a better word, in canola oil going forward.
Okay, and probably the time for this last question, Tori. Will new outbreaks of African swine fever in China have an impact on world vegetable oil markets?
So I think there's some chance, like I said before, there's some real uncertainty about what's going on in China right now. And if you look at soybean oil stocks at the ports, they're really, really low. Crush margins have fallen dramatically in China because the demand for meal has taken a bit of a hit because of this ASF outbreak. So to the extent that it means that China crushes less, and that's kind of the way that analysts are heading, they're reducing their forecast for Chinese soybean imports and Chinese soybean crush. They'll have less vegetable oil supplies. Whether it gets to the point where we were last year, where China is forced to import a bunch of vegetable oil and drive prices significantly higher or not, it's too early to tell. And I think I mentioned before on this call that the ASF outbreak this time is a little bit different than it was last time. The strain of ASF for this one is not as deadly as the last one. And so I don't expect they're going to have to cull 40 or 50% of their herd. But I think that there is some chance that we get back to the situation where we were last year, where China has to import a bunch of vegetable oil and it supports world prices.
All right. Thank you, Tori. We're going to wrap now for today. We've hit our 30-minute limit. Anyhow, thank you all for attending. Thank you for the questions. Tori, thanks for the insights. I'll post a recording of this probably tomorrow sometime, so you have that. And thank you all. Have a good one.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.